You are listening to the News Project for the week of January 6, 2020. Brought to you by GNAT TV, this week's podcast brings you these stories. Mindfulness would be a great start to the new year. Driving with a suspended license? The workaround. And financial advisor Todd Walker completes his five-part series with a look at socially responsible investing.
Mindfulness is a term in frequent use nowadays. A hectic, fast-moving world often leaves many people yearning for a greater sense of calmness and inner peace. For some, mindfulness, the psychological process of bringing one's attention to experiences occurring in the present moment without judgment, which one can develop through the practice of meditation and through other training, is one pathway towards that goal. Starting Monday, January 13th, and continuing on the second and fourth Mondays of each month, until May 11th, Larissa Hall Carlson, who has taught mindfulness and meditation for more than 15 years, will be offering classes in mindfulness at the Manchester Community Library. We met up with her at the library recently to discuss what mindfulness is and what she'll be covering in the bi-monthly sessions.
Mindfulness is really all about being in the present moment, being in the here and now, being aware of feelings, sensations, thoughts, which spawn action. And so to live our life with intention, to be present, to act skillfully, to be thoughtful, this is really all of mindfulness. The mindful path is really broad, really wide, and there are many, many practices that one can dive into. And so I found myself wanting to really explore it with more vigor. And that took me into 3 years of doing graduate work to get my master's in mindfulness studies. And that has really expanded my understanding of how to bring mindfulness to all types of people, ages, backgrounds, and needs. And I just see how important it is to be sharing mindfulness practices at this time.
One of the things that inspired her to offer the course was the recent visit by a group of Tibetan monks to Manchester who created a sand mandala at the First Congregational Church, she added.
Well, the beauty is that there are many, many benefits to mindfulness practice, and many meditation practices have been researched and proven to do a number of things based on the style that's being practiced, including enhancing concentration and focus, which so many people need nowadays, helping to improve sleep and settle the nervous system, get back into the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the rest and digest system that allows us to stay calm and feel pretty tranquil and relaxed and content. And so many people nowadays are kind of driven and sort of stuck in the sympathetic nervous system, which is the fight or flight nervous system, or the go, go, go nervous system. And mindfulness practices can help settle the nerves.
There's more than one way to work at it. In addition to the basic pose of sitting in a chair or cross-legged, there's also mindfulness walking. These and other techniques will be shared by Larissa. Aside from the fact that January is the start of a new year, when resolutions to try new things or maybe return to a practice that had been allowed to slide become more prominent, why is the middle of winter a good time to try your hand at this? We asked Larissa.
Well, you know, living up here in Vermont, so many people leave the town for the winter. And so it's a time where folks can feel separated and disconnected and lonely, and also get sort of stuck inside. You know, unless you're a snow bunny, it's easy to get just stuck inside for the winter. And so now is the perfect time to connect with the community, to join together at the community library, to practice together techniques that help to enhance radiance and luster and contentment and happiness and connection, to meet other people that you may not run into during the year, and to discover practices that can be used year-round anywhere for the rest of life.
The classes will start at 5:30 p.m. and run until 7 p.m. For more information or to register, call the library at 362-2607. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. What would you do if you lost your driver's license and privileges to drive around? How would you get to work, make it to appointments, or transport your kids to school or other events? Vermont's public transportation system may be getting a little bit better than it used to be, but few would argue that it's just as easy to get around by a bus or train as it is by a car, much less commute to a job. For people who have to drive to work, and most of us do, having a car and a license to drive is a necessity, unless you have someone you can carpool with, which can introduce its own set of inconveniences. Here at GNET, we receive daily reports from the state police on their arrests and situations they're involved with, and it's a rare day when there isn't at least one report filed from somewhere around the state where a driver is stopped and their driver's license turns out to be already criminally suspended or invalid for some reason. Clearly, many Vermonters who have lost their privilege to drive for a period of time have made a calculation that the need to be able to drive for whatever reason outweighs the risk of being caught again and having a larger fine imposed along with more penalty points on a license, and the license then suspended for an even longer period of time, compounding the dilemma facing those now former motorists. Is the situation something of a vicious circle or a catch-22? Is there a middle ground where motorists who make mistakes, like driving while under the influence of drugs or alcohol, could still be able to drive in limited circumstances, such as commuting to work, but not whenever they chose to? We asked Bennington County State's Attorney Erica Marthage what she thought about that and possible alternatives.
I think one of the things we could be looking at would be the some type of provisional driver's license that's been looked at before. I think some other options would be looking at other ignition interlock devices, which would be more affordable than what they currently are, or are provided in only certain situations based on where you live and where you work. I think that the concern, of course, the fear is that folks are just gonna get these work licenses just so that they can continue to drive to the bar. So we obviously wanna control that, because DUI is a serious offense. And sometimes someone gets a DUI one and it results in the death of someone, and that those are the more tragic ones that we're trying to avoid. So, but I think common sense needs to be kind of involved in whatever plan we come up with.
Now, is Vermont typical in the way we do this, or are we sort of, you know, in the minority of states, or do other states offer these alternative driver's licenses that are valid from, let's say, 8 to 6 or whatever?
Right. There are a number of states that do provisional licenses, and again, New York is one of them. So that, because they're right over the border, we hear that from a lot of folks that get a DUI in Vermont and live in Hoosick. They don't understand. So if you get a provisional license in New York, you're still going to be suspended from driving in Vermont. So if you live in Hoosick and work in Bennington, even if you get a provisional license in New York to drive, because you've got the DUI in Vermont, it's going to prohibit you from driving here for 90 days. So it's a very complicated process, I would say. Now, the legislature has made some changes, which I think are important, and I'm glad that we're headed in this direction, which is the expungement and sealing that we've heard so much about. They have expanded sealing and expungement so that if you get a DUI 15 years later, you can actually get that DUI sealed, so that the only individuals that would know you had that would be law enforcement. The legislature's been very focused on the number of criminal charges, the docket numbers in each county, but I can have a week where I have, you know, maybe 35 arraignments, and 15 of them are for driving with no license. And so I refer all of the ones that I can to DLS Diversion, which is a program run by the Center for Restorative Justice that they help individuals get into. The state has various payment plans and commitments, contracts that you enter into so that you can pay down your fines and you get your license back. But they don't, again, they don't apply to the DUIs. So what I typically do in those cases is I'll tell the defendant, look, get your license back on the initial suspension from the DUI, and I'll dismiss the new DLS, because I don't want to see someone now again suspended. And so I think, and I do believe we've talked about the fact that there are some minimum sentences that are attached to driving with license suspended, and I believe some of that may, again, be tied to something with federal funding. So I think it is something that the legislature is probably going to start taking a closer look at, because they are concerned with the number of cases in criminal court, and there are a lot of DLSs in criminal court in every county.
We also spoke with Paul Doucette, the police chief of Bennington, to get his perspective.
So when a motor vehicle operator is stopped and we run their driver's license, they may come back suspended civilly or criminally. A civil suspension would mean that they would receive a Vermont civil violation for the offense. We would remove the vehicle from the public highway and move on to the next traffic stop. If you are suspended criminally in the state of Vermont for a major motor vehicle violation or for a multitude of different reasons, a criminal suspension means that you would be brought back to the Bennington Police Department. You would be fingerprinted, photographed, and issued a citation to appear in Superior Court Criminal Division to answer to the offense of operating while after suspension, criminal violation. Well, at this point in the state of Vermont, there is no privileged driver's license. If you are suspended criminally in the state of Vermont, you cannot operate a motor vehicle. There is no license that you can obtain that would allow you to drive back and forth to work, medical appointments, and things of that nature. Civil suspension is the same. There is nothing in place that would allow someone to operate a motor vehicle after they've been suspended civilly. However, we do have programs in place. People that have received Vermont civil violation complaints and have not been able to pay those fines can contact the Vermont Judicial Bureau, and they can go on a payment plan where they would have to pay $30 per month for each traffic ticket that they have received, and they would be able to keep their driver's license and be able to go to their appointments and go to work as long as they were paying the Vermont Judicial Bureau the $30 a month per ticket. That's something that we do refer many people to so that they can maintain their driver's license. As long as you make those payments, you are able to maintain your driver's license. On the criminal suspension, we do have programs in Vermont. For example, here in Bennington County, you can go through the Center for Restorative Justice, and they do have a DLS program where you can work with a member at CRJ and be able to go and see what it is that you need to do to have your driver's license reinstated. You can't drive during that time. However, they will guide you and give you assistance in making it so that you can be ready for when your license is ready to be reinstated in Vermont. So, for example, if you have a motor vehicle conviction for DUI and you're suspended for 90 days and then you get a DLS and perhaps another DLS, you can go to CRJ and work with them to make sure that you have everything organized and ready to go so that when your suspension date is up, you can pay the reinstatement fee and regain your privilege to drive a vehicle in Vermont.
Is there some point where you kind of run out of chances? I mean, if you kind of make enough mistakes in a row, can you permanently lose a driver's license?
So there is a suspension called a life suspension in Vermont for major motor vehicle violations. People that get too many DUIs, for example, could lose their license for life. However, the way the laws are written in Vermont, that too can be corrected. When someone is involved in abstinence and stays away from alcohol and drugs and things like that. So just because they're suspended for life does not mean that they will not be able to drive later on. But there is a large gap. There's a large period of time that they have to wait. These are people that are habitual offenders and probably don't deserve to drive for a period of time in Vermont because they can't correct their behaviors. Driving in Vermont is a privilege. And that privilege can be suspended if you don't follow the rules of the road.
Mm-hmm. Is this a big issue down here in Bennington?
It is a big issue. I think back almost 30 years to when I started with the Bennington Police Department. Anytime you drove a vehicle and you were under suspension, it was a criminal offense. You were arrested, placed in wrist restraints, brought back to the office, fingerprinted, photographed. Paperwork would go to court, and you'd have to appear in the criminal division. That doesn't work for everyone. You know, they switched it so that only major motor vehicle violations you could make an arrest for, and then they gave you an opportunity. So, for example, if you received a speeding ticket and you didn't pay that, your privilege to drive in Vermont would become suspended. Sometimes it was an oversight for some people. Sometimes it was that people just didn't have the money to pay that, so they would become criminally suspended. So 3 years down the road, they get stopped again for speeding and come to find out their license is criminally suspended, so they would get arrested. So the state changed all that through legislation, and they made it so that you would receive a civil traffic ticket for operating after suspension. If you acquired five, we called it an OSC violation, operating after suspension, civil. If you received five on the sixth time you were stopped, that would become a criminal violation. So for a period of time, we didn't see nearly as many criminal offenses for operating after suspension. They became civil. But then what we have realized is that these same people continue to drive after suspension, and they were receiving too many civil violations, and then it became criminal for them once again. So now we have other programs, as I've mentioned to you, where if you just simply can't figure out or you need assistance, CRJ and the DLS program will help you get your driver's license reinstated. But you have to be willing to do the work to get that privilege back.
The best way out is to probably not lose your license in the first place, although hindsight is too often 20/20. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Hey folks, welcome back, GNAT News, Haas. And I'm with Todd Walker again. He's the financial advisor. And this is the fifth segment in this series on financial information. And in this final segment, what are we talking about?
Well, we're going to get right down to talking about what I do for a living, which is socially responsible investing. The other segments were about financial in general, gotcha. A few mentions of SRI. But for the people who, you know, are interested about social responsible investing, I thought we should have one segment that would address that.
Got it.
Because social responsible investing is now the fastest growing segment of investing today. And that's why you see a lot of the major firms are moving into it and everything else. We, in our firm Greenvest, we only do social responsible investing, it's not a sideline for us. But I want to answer the question why. I mean, why is social responsible investing growing that quickly? And that because that's an endorsement in a way, without me being very biased about why it's wonderful and great. Obviously, around the country, lots of people agree. Of course, the big thing driving it, there's been multiple things, but recently, of course, is climate change. I mean, it's pretty obvious to me, being a Vermonter, being here for 30 years, and I won't go on with the usual examples of, you know, longer, you know, falls and all that, but good fall is a perfect example.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's nice and warm out there, but we're going to pay for this in the end. But so climate change is becoming so evident, of course, you have Greta Thunberg, I guess that's how you pronounce
yep.
it. I mean, she was so eloquent about how she put it, and so direct. That was what was necessary. That more and more people want to do something in general about what can I do? What can I do about climate change? What can I do about many different things? And one of the things you can do is to use your investments to influence corporations. And corporations have an incredible influence on the planet. It's obvious. They cross countries and boundaries. And so changing them in a major way is obviously a way to help the people and the planet. And SRI has changed companies for good, which is one reason why the performance of SRI, social responsible investing, or there are other names for it now, impact right. investing, and people use various things, conscious investing. One of the reasons that when social responsible investing began as a field was the 1980s after apartheid for South Africa. And by boycotting South Africa with investments, boycotting the companies, we were able to basically bring the South African government to its knees. There was other things, of course, but the investment thing was huge because when you suddenly have got massive organizations like pension plans and Harvard University pulling their money out of South Africa, which is a relatively small company compared to ours, it was devastating. So people looked around the 80s, advisors who were interested in this, and said, wait a minute, if we can do that over there, why can't we influence corporations here?
Right.
And that's what started the industry. But there weren't that many social responsible companies back then, sort of pure. And so the selection of social responsible investments was limited, and initially portfolios that were very green and clean didn't do as well. And so it got this sort of bad name of saying, yeah, if you want to invest, you know, in social responsible, it's fine, but you won't make any money and everything else.
Right.
It was somewhat true, to be honest. But over time, so many companies have decided to be sustainable and have sustainability in the part of their websites and to clean up their acts, that social responsible investing now does as well, if not better. A lot are claiming better. We don't do that. But there are a lot of studies that show it is actually outperforming. So, especially when you factor in fossil fuel industries like coal, for example, where we're getting problems with what they call stranded assets. You've got to, I don't want to go into detail about that, but basically, people say, well, someday oil will be stranded assets. They won't be able to take these assets that they're declaring as part of their book value out of the ground. So, you know, they won't, right now, they're worthless if you can't get them out. Well, that is going to happen to oil, but it's happened already to coal. I mean, we have zillions of, I don't know about that, billions and billions of pounds of coal in the ground that we could use for energy, and no one wants them because of the pollution. You know, even China's cutting back on them. So this is a stranded asset, and so that's why many companies out there, their traditional investing, are risky. Risky for reasons that no one ever thought about. So, go ahead.
In the beginning, it sounds like it was almost used as a tool to, I'm not going to say attack, that's not the word I want, but
influence.
Influence companies by changing their stock price.
To limit the number of people who wanted to buy the stock.
Right, so the stock's going down because all the pensions are pulling their money out and the company's going. Our stock price is the most important thing to our shareholders, and it's going down, so maybe we should pay attention to this idea that maybe we should be more responsible.
Right. It didn't always go down because there's a lot of stock out there. I mean, right. It wasn't like this, you know, we were boycotting the stock.
But that was the first thing sounded like a lot of conflict.
Yep.
And it almost sounds like what you're saying now is that those policies have been adopted, and now I'm not saying there isn't any conflict. I'm just saying now it's just part of doing good business. Is that where we're going?
Nice. Very nicely done. I mean, that's exactly it. It's part of doing good business. I got to write that one down because that's a good
right.
a good way to put it, because obviously double meaning of good there. That's right. It's part of why not? I mean, why not do the right thing? And why not cut from pollution? Why not stop? I mean, what happens so many times is we finally have to see literally an ocean of plastic. Right? Literally, you know, an ocean of plastic for us to begin to realize that, you know, maybe there's too much plastic. I mean, it's just how we operate, unfortunately, in the human race.
So then to make money in this socially responsible investing is, in a sense, getting easier.
It's getting easier to compete, to be comparable, and even more so than traditional investing.
Now,
so you don't have to compromise. I mean, in their turn, I've had clients say to me, because this I wouldn't say it's a myth, but I think it's gone on too long. It was true at first that it wasn't doing as well, but it's been propagated, of course, by traditional investing that you lose money, and it's just not true anymore. But I've had clients say to me, look, I want to really help the world, and I want my investments to fight for what I want, but I don't want it to be a charity. You know, I don't want to be a charity. I can't afford, I've got to have comparable return or some return, you know. So now we can confidently do that, and it's just not an issue. And of course, that's why there's so many major firms are getting into it, because they can now give performance, you know, that's comparable. The problem with it for many people, dedicated as our clients, is that they say, well, yeah, that's very nice. You've got a socially responsible division over here, but you're still over here lending money to oil companies and doing everything else you do. So this is just a sideline. This is greenwashing. I hate to use that term because it's our name is Greenvest, but it's greenwashing because essentially you've opened this division and now you can trot out that, you know, you're doing social responsible investing, but it's not allowing you to do business as usual over here. If you're really social, you just change the whole company, but that's easier for me to say.
If I wanted to find out if a company is really doing it, you know, 100%, is there a way to find this out
without
having to hire a professional to tell me?
Not as much as there should be. There are services, and we subscribe to one, that help institutions and advisors evaluate companies,
detailed
reports upon their footprint, their environmental footprint, their social actions, their social governance. In other words, you know, what are people paid?
Right.
And there's these, but there isn't one really for the for individuals. There's As You Sow, which is has a mutual fund screening service where you can go and they'll screen it for weapons and fossil fuels and some other things. But that's just mutual funds, not individual stocks. So it's one of the advantages we talked about a previous episode of why to use a financial advisor, or why you'd want to pay one. And in the SRI world, it's because we do produce these reports.
Right.
But that's sort of a pitch. We didn't want to get into that. But yeah, it's tough. It's the one thing. There you can go on Google and, you know, put in environmental complaints.
Right. And just like following through on that, so I can't afford a financial advisor, or I just don't have enough funds to have one. Index funds, ETFs, like we talked about in previous segments, are they setting up now, like we'll use Vanguard as an example, where I could go to Vanguard and find an ETF or an index fund that said, this, we're just focused on.
Yes, that's where I was going. I mean, there are ways to, it's hard to do it as an individual and just, you know, go to a discount stockbroker or something and trade stocks and then get evaluations. But there are mutual funds and ETFs now, exchange traded funds, that are, they have their own screening discipline. So that's the question. You have to then go to the fund and say, well, what are they actually screening for? What we're finding more and more, because there's good and bad in when anything becomes popular. When organic foods went mainstream, they went natural foods, right? And all of a sudden you had natural foods all over the place, which still had junk in it,
plenty
and GMOs.
Of oil in them.
And so the government had to move in. Actually, it was the government who had to move in the end and say, look, organic's going to mean organic. There were organic associations out there, but the government finally had to come in and say, we got to get some sort of system here because someone's saying pure ingredients. So you had the plus thing when people were eating more naturally, but then you also had the opportunity for sort of gray areas. And so what's happening now with this increase in social responsible investing is you're getting impact funds and social responsible funds, but especially ESG funds, that when you really go in there, you'll find that it's not as pure as we would like in our particular firm.
Right.
They've still got fossil fuels in there. They've still got something, you know, they've got things that are marginal as far as we're concerned, but they're still labeling themselves impact. But nonetheless, you can invest in those things and at least, you know, get more pure. Okay. And there are some funds that are still quite pure. So what SRI also does that I think is important is it gives another layer of scrutiny on the company. Because if you are looking at it for its transgressions, et cetera, and you are looking at it and just going through has there been some sort of complaints, it's just another level of scrutiny in general, which I think is good to have every time you invest in a company besides looking at its book value and management. And, you know, you also want to look, here's another group that's looking at many other things about a company. And I think that a further examination is a bad thing. In fact, one of the justifications on why SRI is actually performing better today than traditional investments, or at least comparable, is that it avoids, through this process of really looking closely at what a company does, it avoids all sorts of risks, like stranded assets. You know, the traditional wouldn't look at that. They're not going to say, what, oil, they're producing profits now, they've got a good dividend, whatever. But we're looking at saying, yeah, but what do those profits look like in the future? If you have, forgetting stranded assets, part of that is the government comes in and finally says, look, you know, we believe this climate change is happening. Well, they did it to coal when Obama was president. Right. They just come in and said, look, you're not going to get these subsidies anymore. You're not. If the government moves in and just bans oil and says, look, there are now tidal waves coming through New York City where, you know, climate change is number one, and you're banned, you know, this is a tremendous risk. So these risks should be looked at. And so when something happens like the city of New York decides to divest from fossil fuels, this is another chip in that whole traditional investments. And so SRI is rising because of these, people are beginning to realize there are a lot more risks involved. And then the other thing that's kind of interesting is that we think that if a company is smart enough to not be in those businesses or to get out of those businesses or to clean up those businesses and say, okay, look, we're going to do it, then it tends to reflect on management that is more intelligent in general. I mean, that's what I think. I know that you know, this, why would anybody, you know, want to use child labor? You know, why would anybody want to I don't think use GMOs, but that's another, and put this kind of risk out to the planet. So I think that I think they're more perceptive, they're deeper thinkers. You know, most of the high-tech companies that you know, there have been other issues with monopoly concerns, but the Googles and the, you know, Facebooks and Microsofts are super involved with being clean. And Apple's had their issues, but they addressed them right away when they found out about the issues in China. And that's the kind of management I want. And the last thing I'll say about this is that we find with social responsible firms, you get a more personalized experience, that the traditional investment business is going the other way. They're requiring that you have more and more and higher minimum investments in order to work with a real advisor. And that more and more it's going robo-advisor. We talked about this before, that the robo is even more technical, more automated. But what you're seeing in a lot of the other firms is that whereas we used to get a personal advisor, if you had $100,000 or, you know, now even with $250,000, you get a team approach where you get somebody who's, you know, you talk to today, and they're very nice. I'm sure they're very nice, and but you then go back tomorrow and call about that issue, and that person says, "Well, Jane's not here. I'm Sid, and I have all the notes from Jane." But and you like this team. A lot of people don't. I mean, I think I would want someone who really knew me, knew my family, knew my background, knew my social responsible issues. So I think that we're finding that the SRI is, I don't know if it's bad, you know, it's probably bad for profits not to robotize everything, but it's holding out more against this, you know, automated investing approach. So we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Just a quick ending to this. Where do you see this whole concept going in terms of the investment future?
SRI?
Right, just the whole social investing. Will this be a thing that's at some point just become so everyday that we'll remember the days when we were talking about it?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. I remember when we are still very health food conscious in our family. And before that, I actually worked in the natural foods business long ago when I was younger. Didn't everybody? <You know? laughs> But, you know, at first, I realized as Whole Foods, and I had friends who owned natural food stores, and as Whole Foods, it was actually originally in Boston, where I'm from. It was originally, Bread and Circus. Bread and Circus was in Boston. And as Bread and Circus took over independent health food stores, we said, hey, man, you know, that's not cool. Right. That's not cool, you know. And putting these people out of business, and I still don't like it. But as I saw then Whole Foods grow, and then I got this statistic that kind of floored me, that actually the largest seller of organic food in this country, I believe, is Costco, and Walmart's not far behind.
Right.
And so you say, and you realize you've become sort of a new age snob. You know, hey, wait a minute. Wait, we're the ones who do, you know, right? They're not allowed to do that. Then we're the purveyors of truth about food, and it's the same thing here. And so But really, if the whole world went natural foods or organic foods, and essentially Whole Foods, I don't know if went out of business, but it would just, and we would have really had the greatest victory. And it's the same thing here. I mean, if the whole world went SRI and it was just sustainability was just a critical part of every investment, and GreenVest, you know, no longer would be like, well, that's very nice, but we can get that for less over here because everyone does it.
Right.
That would be a victory. It would be a victory because, and I think that's the way to look at it.
Got it.
Yeah.
So folks,
music comes up now.
Yeah, the music comes up now. So Todd and I have spent the day. We filmed five segments.
Five segments.
And I'm going to run them back to back throughout the coming weeks. I may skip a week. I don't know what I'm going to do. But
you need to explain the same clothes.
Same clothes because we've been here all day teaching a lot of stuff. Thank you so much time for all the time you spent with us
it's
and
terrific.
Just helping everybody out there
understand
this stuff.
Really terrific.
And I think we're probably going to do this again in the future.
We'll see. Write in. Send your cards and letters. I'd love to do it. It's as you get older, you know, you want to pass on what you know. So right. Yeah.
So folks. Thanks for spending time with us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.